Hello and welcome to this podcast. This podcast is on an amendment to disclosure requirements of IFRS 7. My name is Gavin Francis and I'm joined by Christian Kushiyavar. We're both on staff of the IASB. In this podcast, I'd like to do two things. One, set in context the amendment to IFRS 7, and two, to provide you with a summary of the new requirements and how they help users of financial statements. I'd like to stress that all views expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and not the IASB. Further information about the amendments and the Financial Instruments Project can be found on the IASB website. So Christian, before we actually look at the amendment itself, let's try and put it in context. Can you explain how this amendment relates to an exposure draft that the IASB issued back in March 2009 that proposed improvements to derecognition requirements in IAS 39?
Thanks, Gavin. First of all, let's step back in time. In April 2005, IASB added derecognition to its research agenda to consider how to improve IAS 39 requirements. The project was also included on 2006 Memorandum of Understanding with the FASB, as IFRS and US GAAP requirements are different. The financial crisis came along, which accelerated efforts by the IASB, and in March 2009, the IASB issued proposals to replace existing requirements. Consistent with requests from the Financial Stability Board and others, in the meantime, FASB also amended their requirements, which are in particular the QSB requirements, in response to similar requests, which actually moved US GAAP closer to IFRS in terms of accounting outcomes. In response to ISB exposure drafts, many respondents said first that IAS 39 derecognition requirements had worked well in the financial crisis. Number two, they said our ISB should spend more time considering the alternative model that was described in the ED. Thirdly, they said in the meantime, the ISB should focus on improving disclosures. And lastly, it was very important that ISB and the FASB ended up with the same approach.
So let's just follow up that last point. The ISB and FASB did discuss the alternative approach which the ISB did develop, and then what happened?
Yeah, the boards discussed it and made some progress on it, but they reconsidered their strategies going forward May of this year, and they came to a conclusion that in the light of comments received from national standard setters that IAS 39 is working well, and now there seems to be a more alignment between the two derecognition requirements, the US requirements and the IFRS requirements.
In terms of accounting outcomes.
And hence, the suggestion or the recommendation was that the board should focus on aligning their disclosure requirements and then in the long term work on converging their guidance for derecognition.
Okay, so that brings us back then to the disclosure amendments that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Those disclosure amendments were proposed in the exposure draft, the ISB exposure draft you just talked about, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. We had more or less a similar requirement in the exposure draft that we issued in March 2009.
Okay, so the requirements, the amendments to IFRS 7 essentially have taken those proposed disclosure requirements. Obviously, the board's re-deliberated the comments, and then the ISB has finalised those.
That's correct, yeah.
So let's turn to those disclosure amendments. What do they address?
Well, the disclosures will help address two things. First of all, it will help in evaluating risk exposures relating to transfer activity. It also helps in evaluating the effect of those risks on financial position of a transferor or an entity that engages in transfer activity. But in particular, it achieves these two objectives by addressing disclosure or requiring disclosures for transfers that fail derecognition and transfers that you are able to de-recognize the asset, but you have ongoing involvement or continuing involvement in the asset that you've transferred.
Okay, so those are the two sort of situations that the amendments to IFRS 7 look at, where you have a transfer transaction, but you don't get accounting de-recognition.
That's correct.
And secondly, where you have a transfer transaction, you do get de-recognition, but the transferor has some form of continuing involvement in the transferred assets going forward.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so how do these new requirements change the current requirements we have in IFRS 7?
Well, it is adding to what we have in IFRS 7 today. Today in IFRS 7, if you fail derecognition, you are required to provide some disclosure. It's not all transactions that fail derecognition, for instance, that you have that requirement for. So we're expanding the scope of the application of that guidance.
So that's transactions where you fail disclosure.
You fail derecognition.
You fail derecognition. What about transactions where you actually get derecognition, but you have some continuing involvement going forward? What's IFRS 7 required today?
Today, IFRS 7 will not require you to disclose anything in relating to transfer activity or transfer assets that you get derecognition. Whether you have continued involvement or not, there's no requirement in IFRS 7 today. But the proposal or the amendment that is coming into effect will require you to disclose certain information if you have continued involvement in an asset that you've transferred or you get derecognition for an asset.
So when we talk about continuing involvement, you know, what do you mean? Or what do we mean in these disclosure amendments?
Well, in simple terms, it means where you transfer an asset but you have an exposure to the performance of the asset that you've transferred. And that can come about in two ways. Either you retain some of the contractual rights inherent in the asset you transferred, or you get, or you obtain new contractual rights relating to the asset that you've transferred. So basically, any time you're exposed to the performance of the asset that you transferred, you do have continued involvement. Except where you have normal representations and warranties, or the price that you have to pay to get the asset back in the future is at fair value.
Okay, so I was just going to give some examples of continuing involvement. An example might include, for example, I transfer some assets, but in that transfer transaction, I have a call option by which I can buy the assets back at a price that's under the fair value.
Mm-hmm.
Another example might be where the person I transfer the assets to has the right, or indeed the option, to sell the assets back to me. Prices other than fair value.
That's correct.
So those are some examples of what we mean by continuing involvement. Why did the board first of all propose these disclosures in the exposure draft and then finalise the disclosures? If they're not in IFRS 7 today, I mean, what drove the board to basically make these changes to IFRS 7?
The board received requests from users, regulators, that there should be more transparency surrounding transfer transactions. And at the moment, you cannot really tell so much what your risk exposure is after you've transferred an asset, whether you get derecognition or not. And hence, the board continued on the path that we set initially by issuing the ED, by then finalizing these requirements so that there will be transparency surrounding transfer transactions. And then also, you can tell what your exposure is, well, an entity's exposure is after transfer transaction takes place.
And that's a pretty important point from the feedback we've had from lots of investors, especially during the financial crisis.
That's correct.
That a transfer transaction happens, so you get derecognition, but there remains some form of continuing exposure. Mm-hmm. And is it fair to say that most of the investors that the ISB talked to thought it was very important in those circumstances to have increased information about what those exposures might be or could be going forward?
Yeah. I think our investors or users in general recognize that we're asking for more disclosures about certain types of transactions, i.e. transfer transactions, which might probably apply to any other assets or liabilities that you have. But it felt in this particular instance, it is very important for them to have that information so that they can tell what the risk exposure of the entity is going forward. Not only that, even where you don't get derecognition, they want to be able to tell what the relationship is between the asset that you didn't get derecognition for and the liability associated with that particular asset.
Okay, let's stay just looking at the example of where you transferred assets but you have some form of continuing involvement. We said that investors are interested in what the exposure is after the transfer transactions happen and derecognitions happen. Can you just give me some examples, therefore, of the disclosures that are going to be required under this amendment to IFRS 7 in those situations?
So, for instance, you transfer an asset and you have you give a put option to the transferee to put the asset back to you in the future. You'll be required to disclose the carrying amount of the put option, which represents your continuing involvement in the asset that you transferred.
So that's in my balance sheet.
That's right, yeah. So the carrying amount, the fair value of that continuing involvement, and your maximum exposure to loss as a result of that put option. Then also, you need to disclose an undiscounted cash flow that you'll be required to pay when the put or the asset is put to you in the future.
So that would be my cash outflow
to
repurchase.
To repurchase the asset in the future. Then also gain and loss that you recognize in your accounts on the date of the transfer. And then also any qualitative information that will help users to understand the transaction that you've entered into.
And in terms of the timing of the possible repurchase of the asset, is there also a disclosure around that?
Yes, certainly. There is a disclosure because users are interested in knowing the amount and the timing of those cash outflows in the future. And hence, you're required to set out in a table the maturity of those outflows, when exactly you'll be required to make those outflows in the future.
So I guess the idea is to allow investors to have greater insight into possibly the liquidity needs, how the liquidity needs of the company might develop as a result of the continuing involvement that they have in these transferred assets.
That is correct. And if you think about it, many investors were surprised when certain items that were derecognized landed back on the balance sheets of many financial institutions, and hence with this particular disclosure requirement you can tell when these items will be coming back and how much the entity will have to pay to get the assets back in the future.
Okay, so these disclosure requirements, I guess in summary, are sort of a response to very specific requests we had from investors and others.
That's correct.
Thank you very much, Christian, and thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope you found it helpful. I'd like to emphasise again that the views expressed in this podcast were personal views of the presenters. Please look on the ISB website for further information about the amendments to IFRS 7 that the ISB has issued. Thank you and goodbye.